Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for waking up so early to come. I have the advantage that right now in New York it's actually 11, so I'm quite awake. But thank you so much for coming. I would like to thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity to talk about some of the work that I've been doing on the interactions of organic contaminants with minerals, as well as some progress that I've made in my group at Cornell for the past year and a half. So I'm going to talk today about two main stories. The first one is a detailed study on oxytetracycline adsorption among monolithic and the influence of pH. The reason that I got interested on the interactions of tetracyclines is because they're heavily used in agriculture. And oxytetracycline in particular is used in the veterinary medicine, and it can disrupt several microbial processes in soil. And it has been shown that it has high affinity to minerals. But more specifically, it was shown that there was decreased in toxicity of these antibiotics when they are actually absorbed to soils that are enriched in smectite clay minerals versus soils that are enriched in kaolinitic minerals. So this actually gave a suggestion that smectites are very important for binding of this antibiotic. So my work on this, and I've been working on this actually since my postdoc in France and continuing working on it at Cornell, is looking at the influence of pH, where there are the proposals that it's only the ionizable functional groups in tetracycline that drive the pH-dependent absorption, or is there something else going on? And as a preview, there is actually something else going on. And to finish up my talk, I will talk about mycocysteine absorption among monolithic surfaces. And this work is mainly done by a master's student who's just graduated from my group. And this work is mainly on molecular dynamics. And I'll talk a little bit later the different techniques that I use for these two stories. But the reason why we are interested in mycocysteine, and if you've heard the news this past summer, is the fact that we have a lot of these cyanotoxins that are enriched in surface waters. And I don't know if you knew, in Toledo, Ohio, they had to close down all the restaurants because there was so much cyanotoxins in the water. Now, in terms of cyanotoxin fate in surface waters, one of the ways that people think that the cyanotoxin disappear from the water column is that it can get bound to soil particles. And people have also suggested that it can get bound to minerals as well. So this work was to see how the aquatic chemistry can actually change the conformation of these cyanotoxins and actually lead to different absorption mechanisms. So why am I interested in smectite clays? So my work for the past 5 years or so, I've focused on smectite clays, and it's because of the fact that in the interlayer you can have cation exchange with organic contaminants actually exchanging for protons and also sodium or calcium in the interlayer. So how the interlayer actually evolve in this smectite? So you have a silicate layer, and in the silicate layer you can have substitution of aluminum for silicon, and you have negative charges that can arise from there. But actually in smectites, most of the isomorphic substitution, actually the structural charges, are coming from the octahedral layer, where you have magnesium substituting for aluminum. And from there you have this permanent structural charge that can be charge balanced with either sodium or calcium in the interlayer. Now you can have organic contaminants a lot of the organic contaminants have positively charged amino groups, and those amino groups then can replace the sodium or the calcium in the interlayer and get intercalated in the interlayer. And as a result, you get trapping of this organic contaminant in the interlayer. Now, in addition to these cation exchange, and also you can have ternary complexes when you have a multivalent cation that can bridge interaction between a positively charged, negatively charged moiety coming from the polar organic contaminant and the negatively charged surface of the clay. Now, in addition to this, you can have surface complexation, and surface complexation mechanisms are mediated by hydrogen bonding, and also you can have surface complexation with exposed metals on the surface. Sorry about that. Now, these type of interactions can happen with any minerals, but with smectites, the interlayer adsorption is the special feature for these mic lights. So what I did, I'll start the story by talking about the results from my postdoc and then talking about how we build on that in my group. So for my postdoc, I was looking at the influence of pH. Specifically, I looked at adsorption at pH 4, 5, 6, and 8. And the reason I chose those four pH values because they're environmentally relevant. But in addition to that, the speciation of oxytetracycline, which is the compound on the left, it has the protonated amino group, and this actually stays positive over an entire range of environmentally relevant pH. And it has this group here that can deprotonate at very acidic pH, and as well this hydroxyl group here that can deprotonate at pH about 7. As a result, when you have a pH that's greater than 3.3, your compound is going from positively charged to being a Zwider ion, which means it has a positive and a negative charge. And at pH 5, it's still a Zwider ion. At pH 6, it's still a Zwider ion. And at pH 8, it changes from having a positive charge into negative charges. Now, as you can see from this speciation diagram, pH 5 and pH 6, you have the same speciation of your organic contaminant. Now, we're going to see if we have the same adsorption for the same speciation. Now, what I found was that there was decreased adsorption as a function of increasing pH. Because as you increase the pH, you have increasing negative charges on your organic contaminant, and these negative charges are then repelled from the negative charge surface, presumably. That was the proposal in the literature when I studied this work. Now, I wanted to go forward and see if this decrease in adsorption is actually correlated to decrease interlayer adsorption. So to do that, I did a quite extensive X-ray diffraction study and also complemented that with spectroscopic investigations in order to look at the mechanistic interactions. And specifically, I used NMR and IR. And I did a series of simulations using a combination of Monte Carlo and molecular dynamics simulations in order to confirm the spectroscopic findings. So now let's start with the X-ray diffraction. So as I mentioned earlier, we have decrease in adsorption as you're increasing pH. Now, this is the X-ray diffraction at pH 4 and pH 8 when you have no contaminant. As you put contaminant, this is the layer structure. When you have your contaminant with your clay, you can see a shift in the peaks of your X-ray diffraction. As you shift to lower angles, according to Bragg's law, you're having increasing interlayer distance. So pH 4 and pH 5, we see this decrease in the 2 theta, which means that you have an increase in the interlayer. So this is correlating to the fact that you have increasing interlayer adsorption at the same pH that we saw the highest amount of adsorption. Now at pH 6, recall that I said that at pH 5 and 6, the contaminant has the same speciation. However, it has a different X-ray diffraction pattern for pH 5 and pH 6. And that started to tell me something else is going on that is beyond just ionizable residues that are mediating interactions. I'll get back to that later on. Now, at pH 8, we still get about 100 micromole of tetracycline adsorbed per gram of clay, but there's no shift in your X-ray diffraction pattern. And this is telling us that at pH 8, all the complexation is happening on the surface outside of the interlayer. There's no interlayer adsorption. So now we have to deal with this little discrepancy here. What's going on? So I went further and looked at what are the mechanisms of interactions. First, I used solid-state NMR spectroscopy. That's actually what I learned during my postdoc in France. And I'm just showing here one of the spectra, but I did it at various pH values. This is pure OTC, so that I can have a signature that is correlated to the different groups in the tetracycline. And this is the oxytetracycline bound to the clay. So the main thing I wanted to point your attention here is C33 and C32, and those are the carbons that are associated with the positively charged moiety. And I recall that I said the positively charged moiety is what's mediating the interactions with the negatively charged surface of the clay. Now we see that in the presence of the clay, these signature here that we see here, now it's completely broadened and some of it disappear. And this is giving us an indication that you have adsorption that is going on at this moiety. In addition to this, we see some of the other peaks are more visible, but they're still broadened. And that's an indication of restricted mobility of your antibiotic. Now, to go further, I wanted to see what actual functional groups are involved beyond just the positively charged moiety. Can I have more information? Now, this is IR spectroscopy. Here I have the contaminant just by itself with nothing, and then with the clay. And as you can see, the clay has a pattern that actually overlaps with where you have some significant patterns for the antibiotic, which is quite annoying, but this happens. So that means that I cannot really say anything or resolve anything from this part. However, if you look at part D, so D is referring, I know there are so many labels, but D is referring to the methyl groups that are attached to the positively charged moiety. And you can see here, this is D in the tetracycline by itself, not bound to the clay. And now this is how it's bound to the clay, and we have a split of this antisymmetric methyl deformation. And this is confirming what we saw with the solid-state NMR. And I found the same signature at pH 4 and pH 8, which was quite surprising. So even if you have interlayer adsorption or adsorption outside, it's happening on the basal surface, and you get the same signature. So now, remember I said there was a discrepant pattern with pH 5 and pH 6. I still have to figure out what's going on with that. So this is what I actually worked on in my group at Cornell. Before I get to that, I did some molecular simulation to confirm, actually, to see what structure leads to the interactions that were deduced from the spectroscopic investigation. So first, I did a simulation of the tetracycline in water by itself. I'm removing all the extra waters. And this is to confirm that my simulation method can actually replicate structures of this contaminant that is found in the literature. Then using this optimized structure, I then did a simulation of the optimized contaminant within the clay minerals. And here, I don't know if you can see it well from this image, this is a positively charged, this is how it actually bound to the surface. One thing I want to point out for this image is that in the literature, actually quite a few papers, people are trying to determine surface coverage of contaminant adsorption based on the amount that's absorbed. But you can't really do that because a lot of contaminants actually don't absorb flat. And you can see quite well that for a small molecule like tetracycline, it's quite, you know, it's doing all this movement. And so a lot of times that it's good to do, if you can do a quick molecular simulation just to see what your contaminant structure will be, and then from there you can determine what the surface coverage will be. Here, this is another view to show how the positively charged is in the cavity of the octahedral layer. Okay, so now let's move on to trying to figure out what's going on at pH 5 and pH 6 that show the different XRD patterns. So in order to do that, what I did some more extensive molecular simulation studies. So this is a bit complicated. This is actually the most important part of my talk, so I'll spend a little bit more time explaining what I did. So first, I did molecular simulation of just sodium-saturated clay. Then with water. So the water, the amount of water in the interlayers is an amount of water that was calculated from the amount of water I know is in the ambient environment that I did my X-ray diffraction. Because I'm going to use the simulations to actually come up with simulated X-ray diffraction. I'll get to that in a minute. So I have sodium saturated monolithite, and I also have tetracycline or oxytetracycline saturated monolithite. So presumably, my X-ray diffraction pattern should be a combination of those two going on. So once I have these optimized structures, I can use the z-coordinates of the oxygen and the sodium, and also of the nitrogen and carbon in the tetracycline, use those z-coordinates then to simulate the X-ray diffraction that would result from different combinations of these interlayers. So from that, if you need more information of this methodology, you can ask me or look at the paper. But just from the simulation, then I went to an iterative process of putting together different types of interlayers that will lead to my extra diffraction pattern from the experiment. So in black is the experimental pattern, and in red is my model. Now, I want to point out that at lower angle, it's quite hard to have a good fit. And for those of you who have done extra diffraction before, it's quite normal not having a good fit, but what you want to have is a good fit for when you have your D001, which is your extra diffraction peak. So pH4, pH6, and pH8, those are the fits I'm showing here. So one thing to point out is that pH4, that's when we have the shift and we have greater interlayer absorption. At pH6, that's where we had a broad extra diffraction pattern, and at pH8, and that's where we had no actual surface, no actual interlayer absorption. Now, what layer stackings actually lead to this simulation pattern? And this is the combination of interlayers that lead to the extra diffraction pattern. So here, this is at pH4. The black is showing the tetracycline saturated layers, and then the white is showing the sodium layers. So what I actually found is that the crystallites of the monolithite are completely different as a function of pH. So it's not just the ionizable residues from the tetracycline. You have to take into account that your clay is changing structures as a function of pH, and that actually contribute to the pH-dependent interlayer absorption that we're seeing. So at pH4, I had 40% of the OTC layers that were showing in my extra diffraction. 40% of the total layers have tetracycline in them. And they were randomly interstratified, which means they went anywhere. And that gives us an indication that there were a lot of exfoliated layers, so they could access the layers anywhere. Now, at pH6 and pH8, the layers were segregated, which means that the absorption of the tetracycline into the layer, actually, they would happen next to each other, and you have regions that were enriched in sodium-saturated layers. And this also happened at pH8, but less so. So the conclusion from this is that as you increase pH, your interlayer absorption is both decreased and becoming more segregated, indicating a restricted access of your OTC and also an increased formation of crystallites. Since I'm running out of time, I'm going to skip to my last slide. Sorry, I had all these beautiful pictures to talk about. I wanted to just finish on this slide. So this is the work of my master's student who just graduated on cyanotoxin and looking at the interactions with clays. So she did a series of simulations to try to confirm or some speculations that people had in terms of the mechanisms from experiments, and we wanted to confirm whether or not those mechanisms actually happened and what else is going on. So we had the microcystin, and we also had natural organic matter. This is just a polymer of 6 glucose molecules. So here, this is the yellow is showing the natural organic matter, and the blue blue is showing the microcystin. So if you co-adsorb actually natural organic matter with the microcystin, microcystin can actually compete for sites on the clay surfaces. However, if you have the adsorption of microcystin adsorbed to NOM-coated clay, you have your microcystin is actually wanting to stay more in solution. Now, what we wanted to do, when she showed me those results, I said, okay, how about we put more organic matter? Because the ratio of organic matter to actually microcystin is pretty high in surface waters. Now, if you increase it by 4 times the amount of organic matter, your microcystin is either in solution or trapped within the organic matter. And so this has a very important finding, but I don't have time to talk about it. So I'll end here. And this is a summary of the findings. I really want to thank my group. I have a wonderful group of undergraduate and graduate students and postdocs, and they make my life a little easier. So I wanted to thank them, and I have 2 instrument grants, actually, one from Earth Sciences and one from the Division of Synthetic Biology in National Science Foundation. and also a grant from the National Institute for Food and Agriculture. Thank you. So there are two things going on. The optimization that I did in the water was to see if I get bond angles and bond distances that correspond to published data on the structure of tetracycline. And so I wanted to do these simulations in the same condition that the people did their experiments. And then I did a completely different, so now by doing this, I was able to validate my force field, that my force field can simulate tetracycline adequately. Then I use a tetracycline and put it in the interlayer, and it can flex in the interlayer. So there are two different things. So good question. Yes?
I had the same question.
Okay.
Can you do one more quick question?
Can you do two more quick?
We can do two if they're quick.
Okay, go ahead.
I think you work mostly with sodium saturated macromolite, and I just wonder if you could speculate about the difference in calcium saturated macromolite and the formation of quasicrystals.
Actually, I did work on calcium macromolite. I just didn't show those results. So it's very interesting. At pH 8, when we had no interlayer absorption, we actually had complete interlayer absorption in calcium macromolite. And this interlayer absorption was proven by the X-ray diffraction pattern. We had complete shift to the lower angle. Now, there's a caveat. So the calcium macromolite, if the macromolite is already saturated with calcium, then the tetracycline cannot compete. However, if you have a sodium-saturated macromolite and you introduce calcium tetracycline, there's bridging that can go on, so it can compete with the sodium.
Does that turn out to be not such a short question?
Yeah. I can talk to you afterwards. Thank you. Yeah.